We are, what are we, a week and a, yeah, about a week away from the US election, and their electoral system in terms of how they actually elect their president is a little bit different to us. There's the popular vote and there's this thing called the Electoral College. So let's unpack that a little bit today.
Yeah, Mark, the Electoral College is in fact what elects the president. Mm. Now, it's part of the constitutional arrangement that the president and vice president are elected by the Electoral College. The voting of the population, the popular vote, is actually to, in effect, elect what they call the electors, which are, in effect, the members of the House of Representatives from each state and the two senators from each state. And Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia, has three electors. So these electors are the individuals who actually vote for the president and the vice president, and it's their votes that carry the day. So there are 538 electors, and the convention is that these electors will vote the way the majority vote goes in their particular state. So, for example, we'll take California as a good example. It's the biggest state in terms of population. It's about 39 million voters, and they've got 55 electoral college votes, 55 electors. What that means is there are 53 House of Representatives members elected from California to go to Washington, and two senators. So those 55 votes, if the majority, if the popular vote in California goes, let's say at present it's a Democrat state, if it goes in favour of the Democrats, then that those electors in California by convention all go to the Democratic candidate, the Democrat candidate. Occasionally there have been what are known as rogue electors, and they have at various times voted against the majority vote, but not, as far as I'm aware, to affect outcomes of the election. So basically the American people vote to put their representatives into the Congress, and then their congressional representatives vote on their behalf, representing the dominant, the majority view as per the votes in their particular state.
Now, I think I'm right in thinking that there's only been a couple of times where, and this in theory can also happen, that you can win a popular vote, but the Electoral College goes a different way. And are the amount of folks that make up this Electoral College, is that for each state determined by population as well? Or is it even?
We take that back. There are five instances where this has happened in the past. Okay, where the popular vote has gone to one candidate, but the Electoral College vote has gone in the other direction. And that's largely because in the various states, the popular vote hasn't necessarily gone in favour of the candidate who wins the majority vote overall, okay, the majority popular vote. So, for example, and this is actually, Mark, part of the, shall we say, the non-democratic elements, if you like. Mm. In Australia, we have the principle of one vote, one value. So that it doesn't matter where you live in Australia, your vote is carries the same weight. In the US, the one vote, one value system is not quite as easily honoured or implemented. So, for example, if you're a voter in California, you end up with one-third the value of your vote compared with a voter in, let's say, Wisconsin or whatever, partly because, or Wyoming or Delaware for that matter, partly because California has about 39 million voters, 55 electors. It's basically one elector for every, what's the work out, about 718,000 voters, whereas, say, in Wyoming, it's one elector for 193,000.
So I'm guessing the theory there, Jim, is to try and balance out those smaller states, because if you had the four or five bigger states and they voted a certain way all the time, there would be not much of a contest. Is that what I'm getting right? The idea is to sort of balance out the country?
Well, In broad terms, in the sort of the so-called democratic principle that supposedly operates here, is that the smaller states, the less populated states, have their value, if you like, in the electoral college elevated a little bit so that the more populated states, more densely populated states, don't end up swamping the less populated ones. So that's fine if you have an even spread of voters across the two major parties. But if you have some parts of the country that are dominantly Republican, but they're in areas that they can maximise those electoral college votes, which is what happened this, in the 2016 election.
Yeah, that was one of the examples.
What's really interesting is that we have three from the 19th century. The last one in the 19th century was 1888. It's not then until 2000, 112 years later, that we get a situation where the popular vote is overturned, as it were, by the electoral college, where they don't line up. That was then decided by the Supreme Court, because the votes in Florida were contested, and the Supreme Court had to determine what the outcome of the ballot was in Florida and where the electoral college votes would go. They ended up going to George W. Bush as a result of the Supreme Court vote, which was by one vote, you have to say. 2016, Donald Trump wins on the electoral college. The popular vote went against him, but the way that the votes were distributed through the electoral college meant that he got the majority, and a significant majority at that. So that was 2016. We're heading into 2020, and we may face a similar situation where Joe Biden, as the Democrat, might well win the popular vote, which all indications are. But as I said at the beginning, Mark, the popular vote is only the first step.
It's one element. It's not the whole thing.
Which determines the makeup of the Congress, which determines the makeup, shall we say, the composition of electors for each state. And from there, depending on how each state has voted in its popular vote, will determine which way the electors will go. And at this stage, it's almost impossible to tell. There looks some shift going towards Biden in some of the states that Donald Trump won in 2016, but it's just too hard to predict how that will play out. But basically, the US system, Mark, for the president, is built around the idea that it's not the voters who directly elect the president, it's the voters via the electoral college that elects the president.
I'm in two minds as we finish up, Tim, on the idea of an electoral college, because some would at face value will go, well, gee, you know, if one party gets 10 votes and the others get 8, you know, surely that should be it, as we kind of see here. The other side of that is that different parts of a country represent different things. Like, for example, if you're in some of the smaller states where farming or agriculture, things like that are very important locally, but they are important at a national level too, may those issues that resonate to them may not resonate in the cities and vice versa. So I guess the theory back behind it is a bit of equal representation, but it's always, as with anything, it's always good when it goes your way. If it doesn't go your way,
well,
you don't like it.
That's true, Mark, but I think if the US voting system, the electoral system, was built around and honoured one vote, one value, and there weren't gerrymandered electorates within each various states to ensure particular outcomes, which they are, because each state is responsible for its own set of elections, including the federal elections. So the principles of one vote, one value.
And what a mess that is when you don't have one system.
Well, exactly. So if the elections were as fair as the one vote, one value process would imply, then we might be able to say, yes, the system is much more democratic because it ensures that a balance is brought about. But at the moment, it's not the case of one vote, one value, and it's not the case that the electoral districts are fairly distributed and administered. The US system is sort of precarious in terms of its democratic credentials. But the principle behind the Electoral College was to try and prevent I think that the rationale was put that the majority do not tyrannise the minority.
Yeah.
That the president is elected with a broad base across the Congress, and that the Congress is supportive of the president. Fine in principle, but in practice we've seen, over at least in the past two decades, hostile Congresses and deadlocks between the executive of the presidency on the one hand and the Congress on the other.
Look, it'll either all be over in a little over a week, or it'll just be getting started in a little over a week, but it won't be boring for those who love having a look at politics in the US. We do that today with our Professor of Politics, Dr. Jim Jost. Thank you for your time and getting here through the roadworks. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Mark. See you next week.